recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome in another edition of Sports Night here on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Dalton Erwig, joined as usual by my buddy Corey LeBounty. Hey, Corey, how you doing?
Always a pleasure, Dalton. 6 p.m. Sports Night doesn't get any better than this time of year with plenty of sports going on.
And where were you the moment that Tua Tagovailoa threw his first interception of 2019?
I was at work. But, you know, the statistics, pretty impressive. He tried to force that football, something that the Tua of last year did, trying to get a little greedy, but for his first interception, that's okay.
Hey, it knocks me, knocks him down at least four or five guys on my Heisman ballot, but we'll talk about, not really, we'll talk about that later in the show. Also, joined in studio tonight by a friend of mine. We went to the South Alabama College of Communication together, Tim Gold. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm just excited to be here.
That's awesome. And Tim, if the people out there, they're dying to know. I know I've already been getting texts. I brought you up 10 seconds ago, and they want to know, what do you do and what are you doing here?
Oh, well, thanks. I actually own an insurance company here. It's called Azalea Insurance Advisors, and we do a lot of commercial insurance, so anything where businesses, liability and property, things of that nature, and then personally, home and auto, and a little bit of life insurance as well. So your one-stop shop for those of us here in the Mobile Baldwin area.
There you go. And I always saw you walking around South's campus while I was at school there. I think we might have had one or two, maybe just one class together, if that. But I definitely saw you around at the rec. And you always had on Chicago Bears gear, which was a signal to me that you might not be born and raised in South Alabama, being a fan of the Chicago Bears. So where does your allegiance lie in college football and football in the professional ranks?
Well, I guess I owe my money to the University of South Alabama.
Yes,
so
yes, me too.
So since we're down here, you know, I'm a Jags fan.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, is it one of those I feel like I'm remember when they asked Mitch Trubisky about who was a better player, LeBron or Jordan, and he went to North Carolina and he said LeBron, right? this is that situation. Like, what am I supposed to say?
You can say Illinois. It's okay.
All right. Well, okay. So, out of the closet, Illinois, football, and, well, you know, basketball fan. I mean, right? We all love Lovey.
Of course.
But
the beard.
Dude.
He's now known for the beard.
They couldn't hit water if they fell out of a boat, how I feel about the football program.
Rough year for them, also rough year for the Tennessee Vols, which might be starting to make a turn after this last weekend, and we'll talk about that later. But as we do every week, we'll start it off with some of the headlines from around the world of sports. And we are in the midst of the MLB Championship Series right now. Only four teams remain in Major League Baseball. And what a thriller last night. Carlos Correa with an 11th inning walk-off home run. And his Houston Astros end up beating the New York Yankees 3-2 to even the ALCS at one game apiece. And it was huge for Correa last night. He'd been having a pretty tough postseason to this point. Started out 3-for-22 at the plate in the playoffs. He was out the last few weeks of the regular season dealing with some back problems, and then ended up hitting that walk-off homer last night to win the game. Aaron Judge, he actually put the Yankees on top 2-1 in the fourth inning. He had a two-run shot off Justin Verlander, and a bit of a monkey off his back, too. That was his first home run this postseason, the eighth homer of his playoff career. And last night, also notable, not only for the length of the game, it ended up being almost a five-hour-long game, but the Yankees went to the bullpen over and over again, so much so, in fact, they tied a league championship series record using nine pitchers in the loss to Houston. You had George Springer with the Astros. He tied it in the fifth inning with his franchise record 12th career postseason home run, and then, of course, Correa finishing it with the walk-off in the 11th. So with the ALCS now tied 1-1, Game 3 will be tomorrow afternoon in Houston. And Gerrit Cole, who might be the best pitcher in the entire MLB this year, he'll get the start on the mound for the Astros. He's 18-0 in his last 24 starts, led the majors in strikeouts this year. He'll be going up against the Yankees' Luis Severino. Then in the NLCS, where I know a lot of Braves fans were hoping to still be playing at this point in the year, Washington Nationals now lead that series 2-0 over St. Louis, and that's been a pitcher's duel in Game 1 and 2. The Nationals won the first two games thanks to some of that great pitching and some timely hits at the plate. They won Game 1 on Friday 2-0. Anibal Sanchez actually had a heck of a game on the mound. That game went almost eight innings, only allowed one hit and one base on balls with no runs. Then Saturday, Nationals won that game 2-3-1. And Scherzer started on the mound for them there, went seven innings, 11 strikeouts, no runs allowed. Game 3 getting ready to get started tonight in Washington. And this should be another great pitcher's duel. Have Steven Strasburg on the mound for the Nationals and Cardinals ace Jack Flaherty starting for St. Louis, who Braves fans know pretty well at this point after the last series.
You know, this time last week we were talking about the Braves losing to the Cardinals, I do believe in the ninth inning, Dalton, or in the tenth inning. And now you're talking about a situation to where the Cardinals score 10 runs historically in the first inning to unceremoniously bounce the Braves out of the playoffs. So you ultimately have to look at it, if you're a Braves fan, as a fail on the season. But, you know, I want to talk about baseball safety for a second. And you're talking about the ALCS yesterday, and Game 3 will be tomorrow. But a hard foul ball hits a paramedic in the dugout. I'm just beginning to wonder. I know that this happened earlier in the year where a young lady was hit with a foul ball, but this ball came into the dugout and hit a paramedic who was off duty. So do you think that any type of netting should be added to the dugout or netting extended along the first and third base sides?
Well, they are more teams now extending the netting on the stands all the way down to the foul pole. Actually, the Braves, before the playoffs began, went ahead and extended their netting all the way down, which is looking like a move that they're all going to make. I don't know about putting netting on the dugout, though. You know, there is that rule, and I don't know who all it extends to, but bat boys and bat girls have to wear helmets. You know, the people that are there on the foul ball lines, they wear helmets with their gloves. I don't know. Do you remember if the paramedic had a helmet on? I don't remember.
No, I don't think he did. I don't think he did have a helmet.
Now, I think you got to wear a helmet if you're not a professional baseball player. Even the managers, now they'd look silly if they had to wear helmets in the dugouts there too. So I don't think they should have to. But if you're not a member of the team, you should have to be wearing something on your skull at the least. But they can't start putting nets on the dugouts. That would just, I don't know. We're talking about a game that's been played here in America for over a century now. Something about putting nets over the dugouts would just, are they going to have to unzip it to walk out to go swing the bat and get ready to play?
You know, I'm looking at it like that tight netting to where you can see through it, to where it would just, if a ball hit it, kind of like behind home plate, it would just bounce right back to where you could see through it. You wouldn't have to zip through it. I think the only opening would be right there at the opening where you would, the steps of the dugout.
Yeah.
That's just something that you're looking at changing rules in baseball as well as football. I know a lot of people are purists, don't like to see the rules of football be changed. They said it's going to turn into a game of touch football or flag football,
right,
as well as baseball being altered. But I still think that fan safety and player safety have to be at the priority of all commissioners.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just surprised that I thought that was already a rule, that if you weren't a player or manager, you had to wear the helmet, but I guess not. And while we're on the baseball subject, a couple pretty high-profile retirements over the weekend. And as you see teams get eliminated from the playoffs, you see more and more of this. But after that Braves shellacking in Game 5 last week, Atlanta catcher Brian McCann announced his retirement. McCann began his career 9 seasons with the Braves, was named an All-Star 7 of those 9 years. He then, of course, bounced around the league a little bit, went to the New York Yankees in 2014, got traded to Houston, who's still playing in the ALCS, and that's where he won the World Series in 2017, then had the homecoming, re-signed with Atlanta as a free agent last November. Was hoping, I'm sure, that they'd win the World Series, but after that came to an end last week, he announced his retirement. Then, just Saturday, former South Alabama Jaguar and World Series MVP David Freese announced his retirement from the MLB. If you remember, he was named the Sun Belt Conference Player of the Year with South back in 2006. Spent a couple years at a community college, then transferred to South. played with the Jags in 05 and 06, got drafted by the San Diego Padres. They ended up trading his rights to the St. Louis Cardinals before his first major league game. And then we all know he spent 5 years with the Cardinals, won the World Series MVP in 2011, and has spent the past two seasons with the L.A. Dodgers, also played for the L.A. Angels and Pittsburgh Pirates along the way. But David Freese announcing his retirement from Major League Baseball, and will always hold a huge part of the South Alabama fandom with him wherever he goes.
Without question, and congratulations to an outstanding career, and you have to know when to hold him and know when to fold him, and no one knows better than your own body talking to you. And anytime you can have a former South Alabama Jaguar have as many years and productive years in the major leagues, you just want to tip your cap to him and say congratulations on a great career.
Continuing in the headlines, we got to talk about the basketball story that everyone's been talking about the last 2 weeks, and that would be Zion Williamson with the New Orleans Pelicans. See, thought I was going to talk about the Houston Astros general manager's tweet about China. I think that's been talked about enough over the last week and a half. Let's talk a little bit about Zion and how coming into the league as this highly touted Duke Blue Devil, first overall pick with the Pelicans, and so far he looks as good as advertised. Now, the Pelicans, they've only played four preseason games to this point. They start their season, I think, the 22nd. I think it's next Tuesday, traveling on the road to play at the defending champion Toronto Raptors. But in those four games so far, averaging just over 27 minutes a game, Zion's averaging 23.3 points a game, 6.5 rebounds, 2.3 assists, and 1.5 steals, shooting 71.4% from the field because he's getting those shots so close to the basket. And, you know, he was wanted for just his pure ability and strength, and it looks like that strength is going to carry him through this rookie season in the NBA. He doesn't look out of place at all with some of these big guys.
No, I agree. Lonzo Ball and Zion Williamson are just absolutely fun to watch. You have a creative playmaker like Lonzo Ball who doesn't mind throwing them lobs, and you're going to look at Zion's game continue to develop. It's a young man that, as he continues to get better with his jump shot, he's already going to sell out arenas on the road as well. So not to mention what he's done for the local Pelicans ticket sales, because every game that they have is going to be close to a sellout, just to watch to see if they can possibly make a playoff push. A lot of teams ahead of them, they maybe finish eighth or ninth. I think they're going to be close.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll have a winning season, but I think they'll be close to making that playoff push. My biggest thing is he going to stay healthy for an entire season? That's what I'm looking forward to seeing in his rookie year.
And also the main thing he needs to work on at this point is his defense, because right now he will be taken advantage of at that next level. I know they're going to set him up for a lot of pick and rolls, at least to start the year, but he's got that ability that I think he'll be able to learn how to play defense at the professional level and turn that around. But already his offense looks like it'll pay dividends for the New Orleans Pelicans. Had a NASCAR race finish on a Monday for the second or third time this year. They were delayed at Talladega yesterday because of rain. They made it through 55 of the scheduled 188 laps yesterday. Started the race back up today at 1 o'clock. Had several crashes throughout the day, but a massive crash with seven laps to go and a green-white checkered finish. And the last two laps saw quite the battle, but Ryan Blaney ends up beating Ryan Newman to the line. 0.007 seconds ahead of second place. I believe, if my math checks out, that's 0.007 of a second that he won the race. And huge, because coming up after the race at Kansas next week, they'll be cutting that playoff field down from 12 to 8. Right now you're looking at Alex Bowman, Chase Elliott, Clint Bowyer, and William Byron below that playoff cutoff line. But we have Kansas coming up next week before they cut that down. And of course, with that win, Ryan Blaney locks himself in to the next round of playoffs. And to wrap up the headlines for tonight, the XFL draft going down this week. I had no idea. I saw some press releases going around. I knew they had a draft coming up. Did not realize that it would be going down tomorrow and on Wednesday. And some of the names you'll recognize. Yeah, it's a two-day XFL draft. Who would have guessed it? But some of the names that are going around there you might recognize. In the quarterbacks section of the XFL, you got former Arkansas quarterback Austin Allen. He's going to a team. Former Michigan State quarterback Connor Cook. We all remember Darren Thomas from Oregon, I'm sure. Zach Mettenberger, the former LSU quarterback, who, if he had any records at LSU, they've now long gone since Joe Burrow took over there. Tyree Jackson, who I actually, if you would have asked me, I would have assumed he was still a second or third string in the NFL. He's not. He's signed up to play for the XFL. And former Nebraska quarterback Tanner Lee. And then in some of the positions, Trent Richardson, who might be the first player to play for the NFL, Canadian Football League, the now defunct American Football?
AFL.
Yeah, the AFL, because he was on the Birmingham Iron. Now he's signed up to play for the XFL. We need to get him in an arena football team also. He'd be the first person to play for every single one of those, but he signed up for the XFL. Jacoby Ford from Clemson, and quite a few others. Roberto Aguayo, the former Florida State kicker. So it'll be interesting to see whether the XFL can pull some numbers this year. I'm hoping they last longer than the AFL.
I think they will. Vince McMahon and the WWE, they've learned their lesson on how to brand and market the XFL, so it'll be successful.
All right, coming back, we'll break down this entertaining weekend of college football. Also got some NFL to talk about. Of course, our Heisman Top 5 and Corey LeBounty and my Ballers of the Week. We'll get to all that coming up. You're listening to Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night on this Monday night. Give us a call or text 343-0106. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty with you on this Monday. Also joined by my buddy Tim Gold, a huge sports fan. Had to get him in for one of these episodes. So when we get to the Illinois segment, we'll really go in detail on.
I'll just go away.
You know, I forgot to mention one of those XFL players, Sammy Coates, former Auburn receiver, former Leroy High School Bear. He's also going to play in the XFL. And they're doing a really weird, they're like, they've got phases instead of rounds. So they're going to do a skill players phase, an O-line phase, front seven phase, and then defensive backfield phase. And then all the remaining players and, you know, the specialists, punters, kickers, and long snappers, they'll go after that. So I'm interested just to see what that draft sets up like, how that ends up working out. But a lot of the names we've heard go through college and NFL and maybe couldn't find a spot in the big leagues, now going to try to sign up and play in the XFL. Well, Corey, we were calling it Separation Saturday last Monday, and it sort of turned out to be true. We saw some big names drop this weekend, like the Georgia Bulldogs. We also saw in the top 10 matchup with Florida and LSU. LSU came out on top in a big way, and a couple other top 25 matchups. But that results in us looking at a completely different-looking top 10 than we've had the last few weeks. Alabama, of course, remains number one after routing Texas A&M Saturday 47-28. Tide got 30 first-place votes from the media. They've been on top now for three consecutive weeks. LSU might have had the biggest jump, well, for sure had the biggest jump in the top 10. They moved up to number two from number five after that 42-28 win over the then number seven-ranked Florida Gators in Baton Rouge. LSU got 12 first-place votes because of that win. Now 6-0 this year with wins over two top 10-ranked teams. Pretty big win for them.
You know, you're just talking about the SEC, Dalton. The 27th time the SEC has had the number one and number two teams since 2000. That just speaks on the dominance of the SEC. But I did not expect LSU to leapfrog all the way to number two. And I'm going to stick by my guns and still say I don't think Alabama is the number one team in the country. I still think that Clemson is the number one team in the country. Do I think LSU is a top five team in the country? I absolutely do. But I don't think they should be ranked number two.
Well, Clemson ended up falling, even though they got a pretty sound win over Florida State, 45-14. But because of that LSU win, Clemson falls to number three. Ohio State had a bye. They dropped one spot. They were tied for third with Georgia, but now they're in fourth place. Oklahoma got their biggest win so far this year over Texas, 34-27. They come in at number five. Wisconsin, the second highest ranked Big Ten team right now. They moved up two spots to number six after they shut out Michigan State 38-0. Penn State got another big top 25 win. They move up from 10-7, beat Iowa 17-12. Notre Dame's number eight. They tried to lose it there towards the end, but they held on to beat USC 30-27. Florida falls two spots to number nine after that loss to LSU. And Georgia, the big loser this weekend, they drop seven spots from number three to number 10 after that huge upset loss to South Carolina, 20-17 in double overtime.
You know, here's the thing, though, Dalton. If you're going to lose, I still say you want to lose early because, I mean, the head-to-head matchups, Georgia defeated Notre Dame. So, mm-hmm. so head-to-head, Georgia still kind of controls its own destiny and what they can do. The Georgia Bulldogs still have the Auburn Tigers. You still have an opportunity to possibly, if Alabama holds tight, that you could see them in the SEC championship game. If not, you could possibly see LSU in the championship game, in the SEC championship game. So, to me, Georgia, if you're going to lose, now was the time to lose. Same thing with the Florida Gators. I mean, you're looking at the Florida Gators losing. I didn't expect there to be that many points scored in that game. But again, if I'm going to lose, I want to lose at this point in time in the season. I don't want to lose the Iron Bowl late and then kind of try to wait to see what you're going to do to try to play yourself in then.
Now that sets up the world's largest outdoor cocktail party to be. You would like for them to both come in undefeated if you're a fan of either team, but both coming in with one loss means it's do or die as far as their college football playoff hopes. Auburn, they had a bye this weekend, actually still moved up one spot to number 11. And then we saw a bit of a flip-flop in the rest of the top 25 with the last SEC team, Missouri, who I guess I've got them pegged wrong because I keep thinking they're pretty overrated. They've now won five in a row since they lost that opener to Wyoming. They jump into the rankings for the first time this year at number 22. And on the opposite side, you had Texas A&M finally falling out of the rankings after Bama handed the Aggies their third loss of the season. But you look at those three losses, they come to Clemson, Alabama, and Auburn. If you're going to lose to three teams, I guess those are three pretty good teams to lose to.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. But again, when you're making the type of money that Jimbo Fisher is being paid, right at $7 million a year for a guaranteed 10 years, to me, you've got to win one of those three. And that's just where the Aggies football program expects them to be.
Let's talk a little bit about that South Carolina upset win over Georgia. I know we mentioned it just a minute ago. And then coming back on the other side of the break, we'll break down that LSU and Florida game from Baton Rouge. But with Georgia, at this point, if you're a Bulldogs fan, you got to be worried about the ability of that offense to put up points. We're seeing Alabama, LSU, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Clemson still, even though their offense hasn't looked pretty, those top four teams that you're looking at are just able to put points up every single week. You know they're going to score, and Georgia right now doesn't look like they have the firepower to keep up.
You know, I think that Georgia, I disagree with you, though. I think Georgia does have the firepower. I think Fromm just played a horrible game. I think that Georgia got caught looking ahead in between the hedges, and that's what will happen to you. You had an unranked South Carolina team come and beat Georgia in Athens. You had some uncharacteristic mistakes being made by the Georgia Bulldogs that they have not made week in and week out. But do I think the criticism is valid of Kirby Smart? No, I do not.
Really?
Has he won the big game yet? No, he has not. I mean, because you faltered twice against Alabama, once in the national championship game, last year in the SEC championship game. You're in a situation to where Kirby Smart, I think, is in his fourth year now as head coach at Georgia. I just think that the Georgia Bulldogs are a very dangerous team, but just got caught looking ahead.
Well, you've got who I think is the best kicker in all of the SEC, and Rodrigo Blankenship. And for Kirby Smart to not give him a chance there at the end of the game, what was that, a 55, 60-yarder? The announcer said they were worried about a kick six situation. If that's what you're worried about, I mean, come on, that only happens once ever. and it already happened. So I don't know why he was worried about that, but you got to give Blankenship the chance to win that game.
I agree. Anytime Fromm throws the ball 51 times, though, that's a problem with your rushing attack also.
All right, coming back, we'll talk about that LSU-Florida game, Bama A&M, and breakdown next week in the SEC.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Arwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
It is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Arwig and Corey LaBounty with you on this Monday night, joined by a special guest, a friend of mine, Tim Gold, and Johnny Cash. And talking about this weekend in college football, now entering week 8. I can't believe, Corey, it seemed like and seems like every year we wait days and weeks and months for football season to finally get back around. Then before you know it, you're looking at week 8 on the schedule.
It's a tremendously long time in between that first week in January when the national championships game is played, spring football in mid-April, and then you turn around and you're having to wait until the middle of August to get that football fixed. So you're right, time does go by fast once it does get here.
And finally, down here at least, the weather's starting to turn and feel a little bit more like football weather. But this last Saturday got a huge top 10 matchup in Baton Rouge with the then number 5 ranked LSU Tigers beating the then number 7 ranked Florida Gators 42-28. And then we were just talking about the poll earlier. That LSU win moves them up 3 spots, pretty surprising, all the way up to number 2, and dropped Florida just 2 spots to number 9. And I thought, you know, after Florida's big win over Auburn, they're pretty beat up, relatively beat up, and LSU had just come off a bye week before beating Utah State and were healthy compared to the Florida Gators. Honestly, I thought that LSU was going to come out there in under the lights in Death Valley and wear out the Florida Gators. But the Gators actually even took a 28-21 lead early in the third quarter before they gave up 21 unanswered to end the game. Were you expecting this kind of firepower from both sides on Saturday night?
Absolutely not. I mean, you're looking at a situation to where when you look at the total yardage that was given up, I mean, 511 yards, I did not see that being given up. And that was impressive by both teams, LSU and Florida. It made me wonder, you know, you have two caliber defenses that can really get after one another. I thought that the game probably the over-under point total, we would probably be looking around 35. But when you're at 21 all at halftime, I said, okay, now we're in for an explosive second half as well, and that's exactly what we got.
I just cannot get over this new look LSU offense. I mean, how many years ago was it that LSU and Bama played and it was like a 9-6 final? It was about a decade ago, and now you look at the LSU offense and the Alabama offense, and they look like Big 12 offenses really getting out there. LSU so far this year, and I'm going to keep saying this stat until they put up a big goose egg one of these weeks, but they scored 55 week 1, 45 against Texas week 2, 65 week 3, 66 week 4, 42 against Utah State, and then put up 42 again against Florida. And that quarterback there for LSU, Joe Burrow, his draft stock is rising just as quickly as his Heisman stock. Just look at this stat line against Florida, who you were talking about how good Florida's defense is. They came in ranked third into this game, ranked third with 26 sacks and first in the nation with 12 interceptions. And Joe Burrow goes out there, goes 21 of 24, 3 touchdowns and no picks. His offense faced a third down just 4 times the entire game. That's the fewest ever by an LSU Tigers team.
I think it's just the balance. And, I mean, you're now comfortable in your offensive coordinator and you have a returning quarterback who's comfortable within the system. And I think that's what's important for Coach Orgeron and the LSU Tigers, some continuity, and you have some stud wide receivers that are being able to get it done along with the balanced rushing game of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And when you have that and Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, I think that those two wide receivers are great, and it's going to, you know, set up the epic Alabama-LSU showdown. But you mentioned that 2011 Alabama-LSU game to where it was 9-6.
11.
It was.
So it was even fewer years back than I thought.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
that long ago.
Right.
I remember that one.
And it's a situation, though, to where LSU has definitely developed. Everybody's always been looking for LSU's offense. The defense really hasn't been a problem because the offense is what leaves the defense on the field for too long for the LSU Tigers, and that's been their biggest problem.
Yeah, and that didn't change at all on Saturday night. I think LSU only had 21 31 minutes of possession to Florida's like 39. And at one point, LSU had scored 35 points on only 34 plays. So kind of a Kansas City Chiefs offense situation going on there with them, where having to leave the defense out there for so long makes their numbers not look as good because they're just out there huffing air. I got to also take my lumps. I thought Kyle Trask was going to go in there and get worn out under the lights at Death Valley, but he ended up putting up career highs in passing yards, 310, and threw three touchdowns. He did throw that interception there late in the game in the end zone that probably cost them any chance at coming back. But Kyle Trask, after coming in for Felipe Franks earlier this year, he looks like he might be the real deal too. Unfortunately, we're not going to get many years of Kyle Trask in that offense because it took him so long to get to that part.
I agree. I thought that he would be a little bit banged up and kind of be fresh meat for the LSU Tigers, but he held his own. He stuck there in the pocket and threw some darts to his wide receivers, and they were able to hold on and make him look absolutely outstanding, especially his tight end. Mm-hmm. Patterson had a great game. So it was just a great atmosphere for college football.
All right, and Alabama, they go on the road to College Station and take care of business, just as Nick Saban preaches to them every week. They end up beating the Aggies 47-28. And Tua, even though we were joking earlier, he threw his first interception of the season, he just keeps getting it done there at quarterback. Four more touchdowns, 293 yards in the win. But Corey, you like to follow Bama. Tell me, you worried at all about the penalties, first off, 11 more penalties for Alabama, which is strange for a Nick Saban team to have some issues with discipline, but also on defense. They gave up some big plays to the A&M team, but still, you know, it wasn't like they gave up 48 points, which would have been enough to beat them.
No, I'm worried about Devontae Smith being suspended for the first half against Tennessee. The penalties, Nick Saban.
Are you?
Yeah, I mean, it's one less weapon that you have on the field to go ahead and mash the gas pedal earlier against the Volunteers and crush their hopes in the first half. But when he does return in the second half, he will be a factor and he will be targeted. But it's a situation where Nick Saban was very unhappy with the penalties, and rightfully so, because you go week to week, you look at Alabama's penalties, they'll go one week with one penalty, the next week they'll have 7-11, the next week they'll have three, and then the next week they'll be heavily penalized again. Sooner or later, those type of games, those type of penalties in games will cost you. So I just think that Alabama needs to clean that up.
We talk a whole lot about Alabama's offense and spend a lot of time on the defense, but how about the special teams this last week? They averaged 31 yards per kickoff return and 30 yards, which I think is more impressive, 30 yards per punt return. You had Henry Ruggs, 134 kickoff return yards, and Jaylen Waddle ends up accumulating 128 on punt returns. That was enough to earn Jaylen Waddle the SEC Special Teams Player of the Week. And, oh, by the way, blocked a punt there in the fourth quarter, scooped it up, and scored a touchdown.
Very impressive on the special teams-wise. That's why I say so many weapons. You're looking at Texas A&M having one of the best punters and kicking games in the nation, and Alabama was able to get over 300 yards in special teams alone, and that was very impressive. The fact that they were able defensively to sack A&M five times, and Terrell Lewis started looking like himself and being healthy as well. That's a great sign for Alabama. And I tell you, this Saturday, Alabama's finally going to be able to debut those lights at Bryant Denny that they've been begging to. The next two Saturdays, Alabama has a primetime game.
An 8 p.m. kickoff at home against the, I'll go ahead and say it, the unbeatable Tennessee Vols coming into town in Tuscaloosa. Tennessee finally wins their first FBS game of the year. They came into the week 1-4 and welcomed Joe Moorhead and the Mississippi State Bulldogs into Neyland Stadium at 11 a.m. on Saturday. And the Vols defense finally looked like an SEC caliber defense there. Intercepted three passes, also shut down the then SEC rushing leader Kylan Hill. He came into the game averaging 119 yards rushing a game, and that Tennessee Vols defense kept him to only 13 yards on 11 carries. Now, if you're a Tennessee fan, things started to look like they turned the corner because that freshman quarterback came in, Brian Maurer, and looked really good the week before against Georgia, even though things didn't turn out the right way in that game. And he was looking a little less than good in this game, but still bringing some confidence to the team. He ends up taking the Vols to a 7-3 lead, then lands scorpion style on his head on a tackle after a 13-yard run. It looked pretty clear to me watching on TV that he had injured his neck or head in some form or fashion. For some reason, Jeremy Pruitt does not call timeout, leave him in the game. They do a little draw the next play, and he falls down handing the ball off. Still didn't call a timeout. Let him play two more plays, and he throws an interception. Finally, the quarterback that started the year for Tennessee, Jarrett Garantano, comes back in, goes 6-for-7 for 106 yards, and helps lead the Vols to their first SEC win of the year. For me, unexcusable that Jeremy Pruitt would leave the freshman quarterback in the game without calling timeout just to check on him. But it does look like, after looking at the Pruitt press conference today, that Maurer should be fine. He's going to take some practice reps today. And watch out, Alabama, because he might be able to play this Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Garantano, I know he had his hands full a year ago against the Alabama Crimson Tide. And it's a situation to where, because it's a home game, Alabama's looking for its 12th consecutive victory against the Tennessee Volunteers, and so many people know what the third Saturday in October stands for and means from a tradition standpoint. And yes, Dalton, I do have my cigar on deck. The humidor is ready, but we'll see what happens. You have to stay focused. In Alabama, under a Nick Saban coach team, I don't care what the point spread is, you're going to have to get better week to week, and that's what Nick Saban expects.
I saw a tweet earlier. I had to save it, and this is from the Twitter account of Troll Tide, so I'm sure he's a delight to be around on Twitter. He said it's been 4,741 days, four athletic directors, and seven head coaches since Tennessee last beat Alabama. Now, that is counting interim coaches, so it's not seven hired head coaches, but still, it's been that long since Tennessee beat Alabama, and well, I don't expect things to change this weekend. I'll just tell you that much. Also, some of the other SEC games, we'll run down these. UNLV beat Vanderbilt 34-10, dropping the Commodores to 1-5 this year against, I'll say it, a pretty atrocious UNLV team. They lose badly. Missouri, they keep rolling 38-27 over Ole Miss. That puts the Tigers up in the top 25 for the first time this year. And Kentucky, trotting out their third-string quarterback, who was not even a quarterback to begin the season. He's a receiver converted to quarterback. I think he ran for 198 yards, and Kentucky ran for 330 total, beating Arkansas 24-20. And that's your SEC rundown for the weekend. Also, the Red River Showdown, or Shootout, whatever you want to call it. Oklahoma beats Texas 34-27. Did you like what you saw from Jalen Hurts?
I did. The play where he put the ball, the football, not the basketball, behind his back and then switched hands could possibly be his Heisman-defining moment if they're able to continue to have success. But I love to see Jalen do well. I love to see the Sooners do well because of it, and hopefully it will set up our Heisman watch with Tua and Jalen both being in New York, as well as possibly the Crimson Tide taking on Oklahoma in the semis or the finals possibly also.
Yeah, I'll run through those Heisman odds in a second, but first, how about that Oklahoma defense? That might have been the one thing keeping them from reaching that elite status of the Bamas and Clemson and Ohio States. But the Oklahoma defense sure looked good on Saturday against Sam Ellinger, held Texas to season lows in points with 27 and yards with 310, and more impressively tied a school record with 9 sacks of Sam Ellinger. And that a big reason why Oklahoma remains undefeated and now ranked 5th in the AP Top 25. All right, the Heisman list as we go into week 8 here. Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa, he still remains the odds-on favorite, and actually his odds increased in a good way. He didn't drop further down the board, but he's now nearly even odds to win the Heisman, threw for 4 more touchdowns in that win over A&M, now holds the school record for career touchdown passes, 2,011 yards passing this year, 74% of his passes are hitting their mark, and 29 total touchdowns with that one interception that he finally threw on Saturday. And the biggest mover is Joe Burrow, who now has the second best odds, according to FanDuel, to win the Heisman. He's up to plus 410 in the Heisman odds. I mentioned his stats earlier. 3 incompletions, 21 of 24, with 3 touchdowns and no picks. And he completed 20 passes for the 9th straight game, which is also a school record. Jalen Hurts is right there behind him in the odds. He's at plus 450. He did have a couple bad turnovers in the red zone, but pretty much continued his ways running and throwing the ball. He leads all quarterbacks nationally in rushing with 630 yards, has 8 rushing touchdowns, and he's also completed 71% of his passes with 17 touchdowns and 3 interceptions.
My top 5 Heisman: Tua, Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, Justin Fields and Jonathan Taylor. And Jonathan Taylor's that distance fifth, but Burrow continues to do his thing, and it'll be interesting to see here in a couple of weeks how he does, not only against Auburn, but Alabama as well.
All right, coming up, we'll wrap up the show, talk a little bit about the NFL, and also give you those odds for this Week 8 coming up in the SEC, and a couple more top 25 matchups on the way. You're listening to Sports Night right here, FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey Lebounty.
Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead, this is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey Lebounty wrapping it up on this Monday night. We'll get to our ballers of the week in just a minute. I do want to get to a couple of notes on the NFL really quickly. And, well, New Orleans Saints and Teddy Bridgewater, but mainly that Saints defense, just keep getting it done with Drew Brees on the sideline. They win yesterday in Jacksonville, 13-6 over the Jaguars. Bridgewater, a great game, being a game manager. I'm not saying that's all he can do, but that's what he was yesterday, 240 yards and a touchdown. Now, on an update for Drew Brees, you know, when he went out, they were saying could be at least 6 weeks, which would have put him at that Arizona Cardinals game coming up in Week 8. But it's looking like now, you know, they have a bye after that Cardinals game, and the Saints 4-0 without Drew Brees in the lineup. Maybe they'll just hold him out until Week 10 coming out of that bye. I think they host the Atlanta Falcons there in Week 10. But Drew Brees did say this weekend his thumb feels good after the surgery. He's going to ramp up his throwing this week. But that Saints defense, I know a lot has been said about Teddy Bridgewater, but they won't win these games. They wouldn't have won these games if the defense hadn't been playing as well as they have.
I agree. Anytime the Saints can find a way to win, whether it's offensively or defensively, giving Drew Brees an opportunity to go ahead and rest, I think that's a plus for the Saints.
And the NFC South, will stay there for a minute, but Atlanta now 1-5 for the first time since 2007, and they actually lost to Kyler Murray. And those Arizona Cardinals we were just talking about, they beat the Falcons 34-33 yesterday. And they've got a problem, pretty much the opposite of what New Orleans is looking at now. That Atlanta defense just can't stop anyone. I mean, they let Marcus Mariota run a ramp shot over him just a couple weeks ago, and he just got sat yesterday for Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I think the Falcons and the Cowboys both are continuing to struggle. But Lamar Jackson put on a show and made history as well. 236 yards passing, 152 yards rushing as a quarterback. Back, very impressive numbers also.
And Carolina, they played in London against Tampa Bay yesterday. They are now, the Panthers, 4-2. They beat the Buccaneers 37-26. Jameis had a rough one. He threw for 400 yards, but also threw five interceptions. And he lost two more fumbles in that loss. So seven turnovers from Jameis Winston alone. And a big question coming up for Carolina, when Cam Newton is healthy and ready to play, are they going to play him over Kyle Allen, who has been having so much success? Adam Schefter tweeting just an hour ago that Newton's foot injury has healed well. He is expected to be ready to practice after this week's bye. And Panthers said they will make a quarterback determination when Newton is healthy. Schefter says that looks to be coming soon.
Coming off of a bye, I would play him.
You would play him over Kyle Allen. Interesting. Very interesting. All right, let's do our ballers of the week. It's where we say who our baller of the week is. Doesn't necessarily have to be a football player, but in this time of year, it more than likely is. Corey, who's your baller of the week for this Week 7 in the NCAA and Week 6 in NFL?
The defensive back, Israel Mukwamu from South Carolina, wound up having three interceptions of Mr. Fromm as South Carolina upset number three ranked Georgia in Athens. Anytime you can have three interceptions, beat the number three team in the country on their home field, you've got to be a baller of the week.
And he got all three of those, all three of the Fromm interceptions. That is impressive. My baller of the week goes to Joe Burrow. He's now won two top 10 games, beat Texas and then beat Florida this last weekend. And I mentioned his stats earlier, but against this Florida defense, who is – I mean, you don't overlook them. They're a top 10 defense, but he went 21 of 24, three touchdowns and no picks. And now he didn't continue the streak of 300-yard passing games, but he has completed at least 20 passes for 9 games in a row, which, believe it or not, is a school record at LSU. But Joe Burrow has been getting it done each and every week. Looking ahead to this week in the SEC, and we also have a few more top 25 games, but we were talking about it earlier, Alabama's getting to test out those new stadium lights. An 8 p.m. start, which is very late for the SEC, but Bama favored by 34.5 points over Tennessee. Corey, I know you're putting on that you're worried about this one, and as a Tennessee fan, I'm going to tell you, you have nothing to worry about.
Alabama favored by 35, but it's going to be Alabama-Tennessee, third Saturday in October.
There you go. Florida plays at South Carolina. Of course, the Gamecocks coming off their biggest win of the year, maybe the last 2 years, and Florida coming off a pretty tough loss. They also need a bye week coming up soon, but they don't get one. The Gators favored by 5.5 heading to South Carolina. Auburn, they had a bye this last weekend, and they're on the road to play the Arkansas Razorbacks. Tigers are favored by 18.5 points. LSU, they follow up that big win at home against Florida, and they go on the road to beat a team that's probably pretty disappointed this week, Mississippi State Bulldogs. LSU's favored by 19.5 in that one. And the poor Vanderbilt Commodores, no relief in sight. They've got the Missouri Tigers coming to Nashville. Missouri favored by 21.5. Georgia, they'll look to turn things around after suffering their first loss of the year. They host Kentucky. Bulldogs favored by 24.5. And Texas A&M on the road to play at Ole Miss. The Aggies favored by 6.5. And then three more top 25 games we have coming up. The 16th-ranked Michigan Wolverines play at number 7 Penn State. Nittany Lions favored by 8.5. Number 12, Oregon, playing at number 25, Washington. The Ducks favored by 3. And number 17, Arizona State, playing at number 13, Utah. The Utes favored by 13.5.
Don't forget the battle for the belt this coming Wednesday, ESPN2, 7 o'clock p.m. The Jags take on Troy. That's a huge rivalry game. Look forward to seeing that as well.
All right, that does it. Another night of Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Thanks for coming in, Tim.
Hey, thanks, buddy.